thanks for listening to RTE Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Cormick. In this episode, we'll be listening to an interview we recorded with flute player Catherine McAvoy shortly after it was announced that she was to be given the Musician of the Year Award, Ceoil Tóir na Bliana at Gradam Ceoil TG Cathair in 2019. Catherine McAvoy, you're very welcome to The Rolling Wave. Next weekend, you're going to be presented with the Musician of the Year Award at Gradam Ceoil TG Cathair in Belfast. Now, obviously, I know that no musician plays or stops playing because of awards, but I'm sure it was still nice to get the call, was it? How did you feel or how did you react?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Aoife. And I can tell you it was a big shock. But naturally, you know, it's a lovely thing to get. And the family were delighted. And of course, I'm delighted to get an award for something that you love doing and have spent 50 years of my life doing. So, you know, it's fantastic. And, you know, it's wonderful for all the other recipients as well.
Well, it's a lovely recognition of your craft, isn't it, I suppose?
Well, I suppose it is. And I suppose it's paying tribute as well to the people that I learned from and that I listened to over the years. And I suppose it's just great for traditional music and the art of playing traditional music too.
Absolutely. Okay, well, over the next hour or so, we're going to hear lots of flute music, surprisingly enough. But maybe we might start off with a track. So the first person we're going to listen to is Josie McDermott. Tell me a bit about him, your relationship with him, and what we're going to hear.
Well, Josie McDermott, I suppose the first time I met Josie would have been actually in Birmingham in the very early 70s. And he used to come over quite regularly on cultist tours and cultist dinners and stuff like that. So it was a fantastic revelation to me of flute music. And Josie's music is just, you know, the epitome. And he was an icon of flute playing. And it's just so great that that we're able to hear him.
Well, the track you've chosen is the Rathcrowan Reel. Tell me about this track and why you chose it.
Well, it's a great example of Josie playing, and I think it's from a non-commercial CD, and it's just fabulous playing. And of course, Rathcrowan is in County Roscommon, although Josie lived. He reckoned that he was Sligo. His house was sort of on the border between Roscommon and Sligo. But he did class himself as a Sligo man.
Okay. Okay, sure, let's have a listen to it now. So,
Rathcrowan went up. Come on.
Josie McDermott there on the flute. The flute, Catherine, was that your first instrument, or when did you come to the flute?
Well, actually, the flute was not my first instrument. The piano accordion was my first instrument, and it was actually at a parish dance. Our local parish would have been St. Patrick's in Birmingham, and my mother would have been very involved in making tea and sandwiches and stuff like that, you know, for different functions. And I was dragged along one evening, and there were some Irish dancers there, and there was a girl called Kathleen Laurie playing the piano accordion, and I was just mesmerised, and not so much by the dancing, but by the music. But anyway, I did end up going for dancing lessons to a woman called Anne King, who now lives down in Mayo. And Anne was quite revolutionary insofar as she used to have us dancing to Sean McGuire and the Four Star Quartet, Michael Coleman, you know, all this great music. So, of course, I'd be trying to get my feet to sort of work, but I would really be listening to this this music, and she used to lend us the records to bring home and practice our dancing to. But anyway, after a while, I sort of really got interested in the music, and I met Kathleen Lowry again, and I asked her if she wouldn't mind teaching me the piano accordion, because we actually had one in the house. My mother had actually bought one for my brother, John, who's a fiddle player, for Christmas. And so she said she would. But meanwhile, I had tried to learn a few tunes myself. But being left-handed, I didn't realise that the accordion was upside down. So when I went for my first lesson, I was actually playing the pigeon on the gate, you know, the pigeon on the gate. And Kathleen said, "Oh, that's lovely. But the accordion is upside down." So, of course, I had to start all over again. So that was it. Started on the accordion. And then, of course, I was listening to, came across Finn Bardwyr and Joe Burke and, you know, people like that. And and I ended up going to the Flan Listowel. And I think, dare I say it, I won the under 11 piano accordion in the year dot.
And did you stop there or did you continue?
No,
with
I carried on until I was about, I'd say, 15. And it was at that stage that I came across Josie and Peg McGrath.
Tell me a little bit about Peg McGrath, because I know you've chosen a track of her playing as well.
Well, Peg would have been a frequent visitor to Birmingham, along with Josie McDermott. And she was the first female that I had actually seen playing the flute. Now, at the time, that really wasn't an issue or anything. It was just that, oh, you know, there's a lovely young woman playing the flute. Yeah, that's nice, you know. Yeah. And then in latter years, obviously, when we used to go home to, as my parents describe it, going home to Roscommon on holiday, we would have gone to Boyle and played in Cosgrove's, and we would have met Peg there, and then going up to Ballyfarn and that, we would have met Josie. So our paths would have crossed quite a lot. And then there was a weekend run by Coltus Kilterrier in Gormanston College in County Meath. And it was a great weekend of music, and Peg would have frequented that weekend as well, and we would have had tunes. Of course, I would have been a novice player at that stage.
And I know you've chosen a track of hers. What is she? What are we going to hear her playing?
I think on this track she's actually playing "Trip to Birmingham," and it's off a CD that was made by the Tawn Cayley Band, who are based in Dundalk. And Peg, who was also known as Peg Needham, obviously that was her married name. Peg actually was the founder of the Tawn Cayley Band, and very, very sadly, when Peg was killed in a traffic accident, they phoned me and they said, "Look, we need another flute player with the band." And while naturally enough Peg could never be replaced, I was lucky enough to be drafted in. So the Tawn Cayley Band had actually, we won three in a row, famous three in a row, you know, at the All-Ireland Fla, and we recorded an album. And of course, as a fitting tribute to Peg, we put a track of her on it. So this is it.
McGrath there playing. You were talking about Cayley bands, and you mentioned to me earlier on that you actually Well, I know you've played in a number of Cayley bands because you mentioned the Thoyne and there was the Birmingham Cayley band.
Yes,
but
yeah.
I, you were saying earlier that you played on Cayley House with the Birmingham Cayley band. Tell me that story.
Oh, my word. Yeah. I mean, in how I ended up actually playing the flute with the band was the whistle player, Tom, who also played the flute. He played with the Birmingham Cayley band for a while and I played the piano. And then when Tom returned to Ireland, they knew that I had been learning a few tunes on the flute, and the band used to frequently come over for the Oireachtas, which was held out in the RDS. It was in Dublin at the time. And so they basically sort of said, gave me the flute that Tom had been playing and said, learn the tunes. And they drafted somebody else in on the piano, a girl called Celestine Boyle, and whose uncle and whose dad also played with the band. So it was like a baptism of fire. It really was a baptism of fire. So we came over for the Oireachtas, and any time we sort of came over to Dublin, we used to be drafted in for Cayley House. And we used to stay in the Castle Hotel in Gardiner Street. And the studio was actually in the GPO, above the GPO. I'm really going back now. So, oh, I remember I used to be so proud walking down O'Connell Street into the GPO, and we'd be dressed up in our I don't understand now to this day why we actually put on our uniforms, but we did to do Cayley House because nobody could see us. But anyway, it was a great source of pride for me, you know, going up to the GPO and climbing the stairs and up and doing Cayley House. It was great.
Let's go back a bit, because we're talking about Irish music and the Irish circle you grew up in. But you were in Birmingham. You grew up in Birmingham, but your parents were from Roscommon. What was the sort of scene like where you grew up? Or, I mean, were you in a very Irish community, or what was the environment like?
Well, where we lived actually was it was a very ethnic community. There would have been an Indian family living next door to us, and then on the other side I think there was a lovely family from Somalia, and then I suppose further up our road they would have been Irish families, and then, as I say, our local parish was St. Patrick's. You couldn't get more Irish than that. The music scene at the time, the centre of the music scene in Birmingham would have been 41 Brecon Road, Handsworth, which was the home of Elizabeth Laurie, who was the mother of Kathleen, who I mentioned earlier. And she was, Mrs. Laurie was a nurse, district nurse, and her husband was a doctor. And it was a very open house, a very musical house. Any musicians who were visiting Birmingham would obviously either stay there or at least be passing through. So, you know, I got to meet a whole rake of people, like that's where I met Joe Burke. I would have met a very young Seamus Shannon. Seamus Connolly, the fiddle player, was a frequent visitor. Also, I remember Liam Oag. I would have met Liam Oag there. Yes. And, loads and loads of musicians passing through there.
And did your parents have music, or what did they do?
My mother, Sarah, would have been a very good ballad singer, and she absolutely loved music. She was from outside Strokestown, a place called Kerska. And my uncle John, that would have been her only brother. She had a load of sisters, but only one brother. He was a very, very well-known singer right up until he died there just a few years ago. At sort of parties and things like that, my mother would be, you'd coax her into singing a ballad, you know. My dad then, he was from Kilmore, which was about 6 miles further out the road from Strokestown. And Paddy McAvoy. And Dad would have, you know, he could knock out a few tunes on the whistle. His brother Tommy, who was also known as Star, because apparently he was a great footballer, GA Star, he would have been quite a good fiddle player. But because he was farming and that, and, you know, he was more interested in football, as was my dad, you know, they didn't sort of keep up their music, you know. As for traditional music in the house, we probably wouldn't have heard that much. And my brother, John, who he was away in boarding school at the time in the early years, and he started learning classical violin, and he was besotted by the Dubliners, and he started, you know, buying all these records, and then he got more immersed in it as well, and he would have got Dennis Murphy and Julia Clifford, and he would have also listened to the Michael Coleman records that I was bringing home from my dancing classes. So yeah, he really got immersed in it then as well.
Let's listen to another track from your very interesting list here, your great list that you brought with you. What would you like to listen to next?
Well, I suppose one of the visitors to Birmingham would have been Joe Burke. And I always loved the combination of Joe Burke and Andy McGann and Felix Dolan. And of course, in latter years, I ended up recording with Felix myself, which was a great honour, and he was a great friend.
Did he record with you on your first album?
He did, on my very first album.
How did you come to know Felix?
Well, of course, I would have, from listening to the album, you know. And in Listowel, one year, I can't even remember what year it was. It was probably in about maybe 1974, maybe. And at that particular time, I was actually, as they say, doing a line with a fiddle player called Brendan Mulvihill. And we were sitting in a session, and Brendan said to me, do you know who's sitting behind you? And Brendan was from the Bronx, by the way. Do you know who's sitting behind you? And I said, no. He said, that's Felix Dolan. And I sort of turned round. And then I sort of had to look up to the sky because there was this big tall man sitting behind. And so Brendan gave me an introduction to him. And that was my very first meeting of him. And then, a good few years later, I was in the Four Seasons and in Capel Street. And Felix was home on holiday, and he came up to me and he said, do you remember me? We met, blah, blah, blah. And it was, oh my goodness, yeah, Felix, yeah. And he said, do you know of any session that in a pub that would have a piano? And I said, do you know, I don't, but I said, I have a piano out at my house. So I said, lured him out. So Felix came out, and I cooked dinner and one thing and another, and I got a few local musicians together, and we did a great night of crack and everything, and the friendship just took off from there.
Well, I distracted you from introducing your track earlier. So
my track of Joe Burke and Andy McGann and Felix Dolan.
Music of Joe Burke, Felix Dolan and Andy McGann there, and I'm here with Catherine McAvoy here in the studio. Catherine, I know you were back and forth to Roscommon on holidays quite often, mm-hmm. but in the end you decided to move back to Ireland. Did you come to Dublin first then, or when was that?
I did. It was in 1977, and I just decided, you know, that time I had sort of finished college and that, and I just decided, and I had sort of met my future husband, Tom. So, yeah, I just decided, I would move back. And, of course, there was a great music scene in Dublin. And Tom would have been involved in that. And I suppose one of the centres of the music at the time was the Four Seasons in Cable Street. And of course, that's where I met John Kelly and John Kelly Jr. and James and Dottie Sproul and Paddy O'Brien, who were regulars there, you know. And also a great flute player that I always admired, and unfortunately he doesn't play, or he can't play now, and that's Mick Gavin. So yeah, the music was great. The great Sunday sessions, sort of Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening, and in Cable Street.
And what was life like then when you moved back? Did you always intend to stay when you moved back? Was that the plan? Or
I did. Well, I suppose I was, what age was I? 19, 20. And I at the time, I suppose I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what to expect. I mean, you know, I was branching out on my own, and I ended up working in the head office in Monkstown in Cultus Culturier and headquarters. And of course, the motley crew were Mary Bergen, Paddy Dlacken, and Seamus MacMahon, who was there at the time. So
we were
in good company, okay. And but no, there was a great music scene. And of course, you had the traditional club in Slattery's. You had people like Paul Brady, a very young Mairead Ní Uaighne, and you know, you'd a whole array of musicians.
It was an amazing array of people to land into when you were sort of 19 or 20, I'm sure.
A baptism of fire, yeah. I can tell you, absolutely.
Yeah. And were your parents surprised that you moved home, or how did they feel about that?
I think they sort of half expected it, you know. I mean, they knew that the way I felt about Ireland, I mean, you know, we would come over on holiday and we would be in Roscommon for 3 weeks, and then there'd be tears when we would be leaving and that. And, you know, I mean, eventually my parents moved back themselves, when both John and myself, we were married and the grandchildren started coming along. And they moved back, which was great.
OK, well, you mentioned the next three musicians, actually, Dottie Sproul, Paddy O'Brien and James Kelly. We're going to hear a track from them. Which track is this?
Oh, this is it's The Small Hills of Offaly, which I think is a composition of Paddy O'Brien's. And that's the Offaly Paddy. And for the sake of all decency, great track.
James Kelly, Paddy O'Brien and Dottie Sproul there. It was interesting again reading about you and your music, because one of the groups you were involved in at one point was Macalla. I think Macalla might have been, correct me if I'm wrong, set up to mark International Women's Day in 1984, is that
That's
right?
That's correct, yeah, yeah.
And especially, I suppose, when you think about, you know, in recent months there have been so much discussion about women's experiences and music, and here you were in 1984 setting up a group. What were the motivations behind setting up Macalla, and how did it come about?
Well, I think the people who were organising the I think it was the Dublin Folk Festival at the time, and they realised that there were a lot of female musicians around Dublin at the time. Now, in all fairness, I have to say that, you know, I mentioned the traditional club in Slattery's, and we all got a chance to play there. It wasn't, I can never remember it being male dominated or anything like that. You know, we were always asked to do our stint in the traditional club. But anyway, yeah, we were asked to for International Women's Day to get as many female musicians together. And I think Joe Spegley was put in charge, and you had Maura O'Keefe, Mary McNamara, there was myself, there was Adele McQueenie, Roma Casey, Mary Corcoran, you know, so hard to mention them all, you know.
It was over 20, I think.
Oh, there was, yeah.
A big group.
But we were all on for it, and we got together, and I think we had a couple of practices, and the girls got songs together and we got music together, and the concert was arranged for the Ormond Hotel on a Sunday afternoon. And we had said to ourselves, you know, it's a nice Sunday afternoon. There's not going to be many people at this now, you know. So we were inside getting organised, and Joe said she'd just go and take a look outside. Well, there was a queue all the way down Patchelor's Walk, and an awful lot of them with male musicians coming to see what was going on here. So it was great fun, you know. It was good fun, and we ended up recording with Gaelin. We never made any money out of it because there was 20 of us. Not that we would have done it for that anyway, but and we did a good few radio programs and television programs, and I remember we did the BB Baskin show. And I have a funny feeling I think we might have done the Late Late Show as well. I can't remember. But we did a programme for BBC up in the north of Ireland as well. And it was good fun. We used to have good fun.
You might have answered this already, but when you hear people talk about the experiences of women in traditional music now and all the work that Fair Play is doing and all those things, can you relate to that? Or did those issues arise for you in your career?
I suppose if I was to really analyse it, yes, they probably did, you know. But at the time, I was too busy with babies and, you know, rearing a family. But I do remember when my youngest was born, Fergus, I didn't go out playing much at all. I mean, I had three at that stage, and I was sort of every so often I would take the flute out, and I would have to stand up playing because otherwise the flute would be pulled out of my hand, you know. But I remember I don't think I played in a session for a good 6 months or 8 months went by, you know. And then I just decided I knew John Kelly was playing in a pub in town, and I said, you know, I'll go in. And I got such a welcome. You know, it was great, and I just thought, yeah, well, you know, it is great, and people do miss you, and you know, I always found the people that I played with very welcoming. Now, that's not with saying that issues did arise. You know, I do know when I was I hadn't been asked at the time to record my first album. But somebody has suggested to me that I approach somebody, and so I did, and they told me I needed to get out and play more. And about a week after that, I got a call from Chloe Connachter, and said, did you ever think of recording? And I just burst out laughing, you know, because of the other reaction that I'd got. I suppose I came from a generation that or maybe it was just my mindset that I thought that you had to be asked to record. I didn't realise that you could actually say, OK, I'm going to record, like people do now. Yeah. I thought you have to be asked, because then people deem you worthy. So that was sort of a mindset that I had.
Well, one of your colleagues in McCullough was Adele McQueenie, and I know you've played sessions with Adele in the Cobblestone for many years. So we might hear a track from the two of you. What I think you've chosen one of the two
of
you playing.
I actually, you know, it's amazing that it was only my husband Tom who said, you know, you're playing in the Cobblestone with Adele for the last nearly 20 years. And I was, oh my goodness, you know, as the time goes by so fast, you know. This is a track that we recorded for, and it's on an album of Vincent Doherty, who is a wonderful, wonderful singer from the north. And he had played in the Cobblestone with us as well. So he had asked myself and Adele, would we record? So this is myself and Adele and Paddy McAvoy, my nephew, on the piano. Thank you.
Catherine McAvoy there with Idel McQueenie, and as I said, they are regulars in the Cobblestone. It's Wednesday night you're doing the
That's
Cobblestone.
Right.
So if you want to hear the live version, you can head into the Cobblestone of a Wednesday evening. Let's talk a bit about your flute playing. I mean, I know other people would describe you as playing in a certain style. How would you describe your flute playing, or do you see yourself as playing in a particular style, or do you just play the way you want to play the tune?
I just play it. That's the way it comes out. I suppose it's like putting everything into a melting pot, and maybe from a flute playing point of view, most of what I would have listened to in the early years, I suppose, there would have been sort of North Connacht, Sligo flute playing. So it's just the way I came out. I didn't particularly, you know, say that is the way I want to play. I just wanted to play correctly, as it were, you know. And because I had no teacher and I'm self-taught, I used to slow down the records on the turntable. No CDs at that time, either reel-to-reel tape recorders or vinyl records, and just listen to whatever the person was doing. And I tell you, Seamus Tansey got a right going over on that turntable. And, you know, it was just studying what they were doing. And then I used to spend hours and hours listening to stuff and playing, and the odd time I would record myself and listen back to it, and I would just say, oh Lord above, you know, that sounds desperate, you know, what am I doing wrong? Which was good, because, you know, you could actually really critique yourself. And I realised, of course, it was the phrasing, the breathing, you know, and still trying to get it right. But anyway, look, it's learning music is a lifelong thing anyway, so...
When you teach now, because I know you teach a good bit of music, you teach at summer schools and all those kinds of things. Do you, because having learnt it by yourself, you have a different take then on how you learn it, presumably, and how you pass it on. Do you pass on technique first or tunes first, or how do you go about
it? A technique, yeah. You know, and I try to instill in the pupil, you know, how they think about the music, and... You know, explain to them, like, the flute isn't like any other instrument. You have to think in a certain way. You know, you have to readjust the tune to sit on the flute, obviously, because you have to phrase it, you have to breathe. So it's really, really important, I think, to instill that in a student in the beginning. How are you going to adapt that tune to sit on the flute? And... you know, I do get maybe a lot, and it's funny with adults who are learning, and they may have learned from a fiddle or an accordion or concertina or whatever, and the biggest thing that they have problem with is the phrasing, the breathing. It's like the breathing on the flute is like bowing on the fiddle, you know, what notes you put in the up bow or the down bow. I mean, I'm not a fiddle player, but, you know, I love playing with fiddle players.
And do you enjoy teaching?
I love teaching. I do, yeah, yeah. And as the years go on, I enjoy it even more. You know, most of the students that I have, the few students I have at home, they're all great, you know, and they love it. And it's also instilling a love of the music and the philosophy behind it, and, you know, the spirituality behind it, because it does transport you to another sphere, as it were. And it's not just about the tunes. It's what goes on behind the tunes. You know, like when I'm playing a tune, and I actually heard Patsy Hanley saying this as well, that, you know, when I play a tune, I think of the person I learnt it from, or I think of the circumstance, you know. Whereas if you learn a tune off the internet, you know, where did you get that? I got it on Facebook or whatever, you know. But I think that's really, really important. Every tune sort of forms a pattern in your brain, and if you play with your eyes closed, you know, it conjures up. It's like the kinesthetic thing that they talk about, you know, it conjures up shapes and colours and different circumstances and different memories, and, you know, it's music is fantastic.
As well as your work with music, you've had a day job for years, teaching in St. Joseph's. Tell me a little about the work you do there.
Yeah, I'm teaching music in St. Joseph's School for Children with a Visual Impairment, which is the only school for children with a visual impairment in the south of Ireland. And it's on the campus of Child Vision, and Child Vision also looks after the services for older students and the Braille Production Centre, and they have a family resource centre and creche. So it's a whole campus there. I've been teaching music there since about 1979-1980, and started teaching traditional instrumental music. And as the years have gone on, obviously the students have changed. There's more multiple disability, not just visual impairment. So obviously I've had to adapt. But yeah, I teach music and a certain amount of therapy work. I'm not a trained music therapist, but, you know, thinking outside the box, coming up with musical projects for the children. And there a few years ago, I think it was 2013, I think, I applied to the Arts Council for funding. I decided to make a recording of musicians who had actually come out of the school from years gone by, because there was a lot of them and they were still playing. And I started researching. I got the money from the Arts Council, which was wonderful, and started researching into blind and visually impaired musicians in the tradition. Amazing, you know, naturally the harpers, Inland Pipers and some fiddlers. So it was a really interesting project, and I got great help from John Blake, who did a lot of the accompanying on the CD, and he also recorded it for me. So it was a wonderful project to be involved in. It's called A Musical Vision, The Blind Tradition, and it was launched at the Willie Clancy Summer School that particular year.
You've picked a track of the sort of ensemble with John Blake, but there's also a track of a small piece of dialogue. Tell me about this.
Yeah, well, this one particular guy, Tomás Langan, and Tomás is a great character. He's from Castlebar, plays the fiddle. He's a great keyboard player, and he basically has made music his life. I know he went to UCD and he did a degree in psychology, but he plays music all the time, and he's a great orator. He's a great way of with words, and so this is Tomás just talking about music.
I have been blind since birth, but I think in one way a lot of blind people and visually impaired people have a great interest in music, because I think you're not distracted so much by visual things around you, that you've more time for the music in your head, because people who can see are constantly being distracted by things passing their eyes, you know, or what's in their visual field. So I think people who are visually impaired, and in particular myself, and I can't speak for everyone, but, well, first of all, your auditory part of your brain, I believe, comes so much more developed. And then again, that you're thinking more about sound and about music, I think it's just a natural thing that the visual impairment has complemented not only my music, but of so many other visually impaired people, it has helped them as well.
Track there from Musical Vision, a CD produced by Catherine McAvoy. Catherine, you've passed the music on to the next generation, because your children also play now, don't they?
They do.
Did you teach them or
no?
You wouldn't dare.
And you wouldn't force my lot to do anything. No, the music was always in the house, and, you know, at family functions, even communions and stuff like that, you know, we would invariably end up having a few tunes. So, you know, the music was there in the house, and they all play. I'm delighted that they do. If they hadn't, I wouldn't have been upset either. But, you know, it's great that they have the music, and they enjoy it.
you brought in a track of them. Introduce this for me, if you
Well, don't. I did. I actually, this is sort of like a home record. Actually, I think it was recorded in Jack Talty's studio down in Clare, and when Fergus was recording his album, and he his two great friends, Andrea Palandre, who's a young man from Italy, fabulous Irish speaker, fabulous fiddle player, and Conor Connolly, who's the T.G. Cahir Young Musician 2019, and Fergus is playing on it, and then we have Paddy McAvoy on the piano, my nephew, and Rory on the bouzouki.
Music there from Fergus McGorman, Andre Palandre, Conor Connolly, Paddy McAvoy and Rory McGorman. Well, Catherine McAvoy, thank you very much for joining us on The Rolling Wave this evening.
Thank you for having me, Aoife.
Good day, Tom Chéanna, and Tachta Chahogan, Ewa. Thanks for listening to the Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcast. So if you want to hear the full version, just go to rte.ie/Radio 1. This programme was first broadcast on the 10th of February 2019. Till the next time, Gura Míle Maithagaí agus Slán.